Welcome to Take Note on WPSU. I'm Patty Satalia. When your back hurts, life hurts. 31 million Americans experience lower back pain. What's the secret for long-term back health? We'll talk with a classically trained spine surgeon who advises back and pain sufferers not to rush to surgery. Dr. Kamshad Razadeh is the author of Take Back Control, a surgeon's guide to healing your spine without medications or surgery. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
You're a board-certified, fellowship-trained spine surgeon and an expert in minimally invasive surgery. You also have an active surgical practice in San Diego, and you have a somewhat surprising perspective as a spine surgeon, advocating against surgery, that it only be done as a last resort. Explain.
Yeah, you know, I've been doing, I finished my spine training about 21 years ago, my fellowship in spine. And at the time, spine surgery for me and during my fellowship was all about fixing either fractures or very severe nerve impingement or people who were paralyzed or had very severe pain or deformities. And then what has happened over the first 10 years of practice was I realized that more and more we were doing surgeries for fusing the spine for back or neck pain. And there was this big, essentially, explosion of spine surgery to treat these conditions that then later caused this kind of downward spiral of more and more surgeries and a lot of opioid addiction. And so I became interested in our timing of surgery and our reasons for having patients undergo surgery and realizing that really a vast majority of these cases that we were doing were unnecessary.
When you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail. So it makes sense that spine surgeons want to do spine surgery.
It is. And the condition, spinal conditions, are such that patients are susceptible and also doctors are susceptible to making this decision. Let me tell you what I mean. Spine conditions in general occur a lot of times because of deconditioning and because of bad habits. But by and large, most of them have a period of time when you have very severe pain, but leave the patient alone. Just give it time. Most of these conditions get better over a period of time. But during the time when the patient's feeling bad, they are very debilitated, very desperate. So they go to a surgeon or go to any practitioner and you want to help them. And so, as you said, you know, as a surgeon, you have that hammer. So you see the nail and you want to hit it. But it's the long term perspective for that patient that's missing in that paradigm.
You know, lower back pain is the single leading cause of disability worldwide. And as you mentioned, if you leave it alone, in most cases, I'm reading 90% of cases, it will go away. But in half the cases, you'll actually have a recurrence of the back pain. But I'm wondering, why are Homo sapiens so prone to back issues?
That's a great question. A lot of it is because we are on 2 feet versus on four. And so also add to that the fact that our sedentary habits with sitting for extended periods of time, concentrating on whether it be computer or TV, and the lack of activity, our generalized decreased activity compared to kind of what we were made to be doing, was consistently walking, lubricating our joints, strengthening our muscles. That all of that is missing. And so it creates a condition where discs, for example, in the back can degenerate much quicker and cause more and more pain.
You mentioned the fact that those who are sedentary are more likely to have back issues. Of course, those who are carrying a lot of weight, especially in the midsection, and this idea that we're meant to move. In fact, you use in your book this analogy to a shark. You know, it's critical to a shark. If they don't move, they don't breathe. Why is movement so critical to our backs?
That's a great question. You know, our discs and our body in general thrives on activity. The disc is the largest structure in your body that doesn't have direct blood supply. So the only way that nutrients get into a disc and the only way that the waste products get out of the disc is by a pumping mechanism. So in essence, if you're not moving, you're not nourishing your disc and you're not getting rid of the waste products inside. muscles are the same thing. There are some great studies now with back muscles and core muscles, and how we watch over time in patients who have back pain, and we get MRI scans, and the less and less active they are, their back muscles are actually being replaced by fat. I mean, if you look at these cross sections, you see these great muscle fibers kind of atrophying and being replaced by fat tissue. So if you're not active, if you're not giving the right stimulus to these structures, they will degenerate and essentially stiffen and stop functioning.
You talk a lot in your book about sitting. We sit at work, we sit in the car, we sit at home in front of the TV. Why is sitting so hard on our backs, especially if we have the posture that more and more Americans seem to have? And I'm talking about that C back, where our head is forward and we're curved.
Yes, because really sitting's not a natural posture as a human to maintain for a long period of time, because your back, if you were standing, if you look at the side view of your back, you have kind of this lazy S curvature between your neck and your upper back and your lower back. And that's a very protective curve. Well, that curve goes away when you sit down and when you start slouching more. And when that slouch occurs, you put more strain on the front portions of your vertebral bodies, which is your disc. And that pumping mechanism not working and all those chemicals and waste products increasing inside your discs then result in that disc degenerating quicker.
Add to this the fact that beginning at age 30, we all begin to lose muscle mass as much as 1% a year on average, and also bone mass. So what you're telling people to do is skip the surgery in most cases, although there are some exceptions, and instead begin an exercise program, but not just an exercise program. So tell us a little bit about this Spine Zone Clinic, this multidisciplinary clinic that you've created in San Diego, California, and what impact it's having on the incidence and the persistence of back pain.
Yes, the impetus for Spine Zone Clinics was exactly what I noticed when I was talking about 10 years ago. We had these patients with a lot of pain, and as a surgeon, I only had one kind of way to fix this. And we would always say this patient has, quote unquote, failed non-operative treatment. And there was no real measure of that. What do we mean by failed non-operative treatment? Some people it was doing massage, some people it was therapy, some people it was acupuncture, chiropractic. There was no measured way. So I went and I said, what does the literature show? What does all these years of studies show about the best ways to treat these different conditions? And let's bring all of that information to bear and measure it and educate our patients and see what happens. And that was the impetus for Spine Zone, taking all these different conditions and saying, what does the literature show? What do we already know? Let's not reinvent the wheel, because we already have all this science behind it. Let's now pull all this together in one way and measure what, for example, the strength of patients' backs are, and enhance that strength in a systematic way. So that's one of the things we do at Spine Zone. The other is the stretching and the stabilization and postural treatment for the patients. And in our 10-year program, what we did was a certain portion at the beginning, we studied this for 2 years, and we found that with a program like this, with the proper education and treatments and measured rehabilitation, that we decreased the rate of surgery 40% in one of the big medical groups here in San Diego.
You're referring to Dr. Jeffrey Jenrett in the Sharp Community Health Group in San Diego, where they, in 2010, with their 950 member physicians, adopted the practices that you were suggesting. And what they found was that the approach to back pain maximizes outcome and minimizes cost. And that leads me to this. You know, more than 1.1 million Americans undergo spinal surgery every year in this country, and that's double the rate of most other developed countries. It's five times more than the rate in the UK.
Yes, and isn't that remarkable? I mean, these are first world countries that operate much less than us. This is, doesn't mean that we have that many more spinal disorders or that we're doing that much more to our bodies here in the US than they do in the UK. It's the fact that we're just much more prone to quickly looking for this solution. And we have a lot of very, very well-trained spine surgeons in the US, and the complications with spine surgery are relatively low and they've decreased over time. So as I said, in that patient population that's very prone to that time when they're in their life where their pain is so severe, they're looking for that solution. It's out there, and so it's going to be more prevalent unless the consumer themselves starts to educate themselves and say, do I really need this? What is the natural history? Meaning that what would happen to my condition if I left it alone or if I used the best available rehabilitation treatments for it? If you ask those questions, a lot of times you'll prevent these kind of unnecessary surgeries.
You know, we are kind of a culture that likes quick fixes, and so we tend to think that the surgery will be a quick fix, but you point out the fact that surgery entails a pretty long recovery period, and for a lot of lower back pain, it really doesn't provide a long-term solution. So let's talk a little bit about the exercise, and I find that really compelling thing to talk about, except that 50% of us who begin an exercise program quit within 6 months. And only 15% of Americans work out 3 times per week. So what level and commitment to exercise is necessary to actually stabilize our spines?
Yes, and that's very true. What is needed is a focus on, number one, just in general, being more active as far as simpler things, like doing the simple walks and the biking and the more aerobic fitness activities, or taking that extra couple of stairs instead of taking the elevator. There are some things in your daily habits, I think, that people could do to greatly enhance their cardiovascular health as well as their spine health. And then take it to the other level. The minute-to-minute kind of observation of proper posture is very important. I think that's something that if people just understand better how they sit and they stand, and if they really feel the impact of this disc that's asking for nutrition, I think that'll be very helpful. The other thing is that there are a lot of available resources to people to exercise at home and with different apps. And we also have an online version of Spine Zone that helps people at home do these exercises. There are a lot of different ways that resonate. And you have to kind of find what resonates with you. I think everybody's going to be a little bit different. So searching for that kind of sweet spot, whether it's, you know, walking with a friend, whether it's, you know, you're a swimmer or you're a biker, finding that activity that you like to do and enhancing it is the way to start the process. The second is, if you do have a very severe episode of pain, is to find a good rehabilitation facility that does a measured rehab that isolates muscles and allows the strength to increase in the spine, and then gets you on your way to empowers you to do it yourself. Any program that makes you feel like they need to do something to you is probably not the right program.
If you're just joining us, this is Take Note on WPSU. I'm Patty Satalia, and our guest is Dr. Kamshad Razadeh, a board-certified, fellowship-trained spine surgeon, member of the Scoliosis Research Society, and an expert in minimally invasive surgery with an active surgical practice in San Diego, California. He's also the author of Take Back Control, a surgeon's guide to healing your spine without medications or surgery. I want to get back for just one moment to sitting, because we do spend so much time sitting. You actually say we ought to make sure that we get up and move around every 30 minutes. And of course, I know in our workspaces, lots and lots of my colleagues today are using standing desks.
Yeah, standing desks are one solution. And I tell you, I don't think it's the main solution, because also I have a lot of patients who get these sit-stand desks, and their companies have paid a lot of money for this big sit-stand desk. And they say, you know, doc, I can't stand for very long either. And that doesn't help me as much either in that way. I think it's, you can create this type of the pump that helps kind of prime your discs by doing by essentially setting a timer and getting up and walking around, or even in sitting, making sure that your posture is well set. And I have a lot of descriptions of how to do this in my book, in the how to sit down and how to prepare your posture so that if you are sitting for that 30 to 45 minutes, that you're not putting excessive strain on your disc. And then when you do get up, a couple quick stretches and getting right back down again, you reset the whole dynamic of that disc to where it's not gonna see those bad metabolic factors that allow it to degenerate. So I think there are simple factors, and you don't have to have the most high-tech solutions. A lot of it is making sure that your ergonomic station with your keyboard and where your monitor is set, if you're at a computer for a long period of time, is correctly set. A lot of people, you'd be surprised at how many people are always looking to one direction, or they're arms are in not the right position for hours. And of course, that's going to set you up. You know, patients who has jobs where they're assembling things or they're having to do things on tables, a lot of them bend over for excessive periods of time, not realizing that. You really have to have that postural awareness and know what normal posture looks like and try to emulate that on a minute-to-minute basis during your days.
Let's talk a little bit about sleep. Sitting posture is really important. Exercise is really important. I'm reading that sleeping sideways is actually the best way to sleep for your back.
Yes, it is the best, but it's not the only. I wouldn't say that just because you're not a side sleeper, you can't sleep on your side, that you're going to be doing yourself harm. The reason side sleeping is good is because they've done studies on the strain on the disc in different positions, and that's probably the best single one. But also, not just lying on your side is important, but it's important to, when you are lying on your side, making sure that there's a pillow between your legs so you don't have any, so you're essentially your thighs are parallel. Because if you don't have your thighs parallel like that, it'll cause some rotation and more problems in the back. And but even if you are a back sleeper who likes sleeping on your back, it's much better to have a wedge or a bunch of pillows underneath your knees so your hips are flexed a little bit. That takes pressure off the low back. So there are ways to modify your posture, even if you want to lie flat. But side sleeping, if you can do it, is definitely the best.
Getting back to exercise, we often talk about the core muscles, the abdominals, but you say it's not just the abs, it's the obliques that are important in providing support to our spines.
Yes, and you bring up a good point about the muscles around the core. We have a phenomenal corset of muscles that runs all the way around our abdomens that stabilize the back. And there are muscles that you feel like right around your spine. Those are called the paraspinal muscles. And then you have the ones around your abdomen, along the sides, the obliques. And then you have the abs. And of those, the abs are, as you said, the third most important in essence. And this corset provides a support, like of a barrel of support that stabilizes the spine, takes the pressure off those discs. And it's very important that they coordinate well for us to do our daily activity. So if you are, for example, lifting correctly with those core muscles, your spine sees much less strain than if you did that incorrectly. So the coordination of those muscles is also what we do at Spine Zone, and it's really well-studied rehabilitation techniques to wakening up these core muscles that a lot of times in patients with chronic pain are completely inhibited or shut down by this chronic pain.
As you know, poor lifting technique is one of the major contributors of back problems. And experts warn, don't lift more than 20% of your body weight, don't pivot or twist or turn while you're lifting. Are there other simple tips that could help prevent back problems?
Yes, I think those are good guidelines to avoid that type of lifting. The other thing to add is when you're lifting, if your back is straight, you're going to put a lot less strain on your back. So even as you are getting up from the seated position, if you can use your glute muscles to get up and keep a straight back, that decreases the strain on your back. Most people, as they get up, they kind of, you know, have that C posture and kind of push themselves up rather than using their glute muscles to get up. Same with lifting. If you lift with a straight back and use the hamstrings and your glutes to lift that weight, then your back sees a lot less strain.
You know, this requires an awareness, an engagement with our muscles, and I think most of us just really aren't that in tune to our bodies.
Yes, and this is where a little education goes a long way. And that's why we've realized that we only have a limited reach, for example, in our spine zone clinics. And that's why we've gone to this online program with coaching so that you have a live person on the other end who you can ask questions and they can see your posture. This is one of the great things with telemedicine now. We can see patients in their own living rooms and talk to them and watch their posture, because there are simple things that, you know, when you're in it, you don't really realize that you're doing. And professional watching you do that can help you give a little insight. And that little insight goes a long way in understanding and in providing good habits.
You know, the onus of this program is so much on the patient. And earlier you mentioned the medical literature. The medical literature also shows that our perception of pain changes greatly based on motivation. In other words, you might look at an MRI and see two people with identical problems, one who is living productively and overcoming the pain. It's not that they're not in pain. And the other who is not moving forward. Explain the difference between the two and how you get people motivated to sort of take ownership of this.
You bring up a great point here about the psychological and the mind-body connection that is so important in spinal conditions. Our spine is the core of our being. So a lot of times when people have spine pain, it's catastrophic. It affects all aspects of their life and the pessimism starts to seep in. And when you're in the midst of a pain that's lasting 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks or months even, getting into this kind of catastrophic thinking is part of what we try to combat with education. So it's this feeling of catastrophizing or feeling that things are only going to get worse that we have to try to combat with facts. And this is where one of the mainstays of spine treatment and in the literature is what's called cognitive behavioral therapy, where we are actually just giving patients the facts rather than what their emotions are telling them at the time. And this can motivate folks because they realize, you know, this is only self-limited. I'm actually not seeing things in the correct light. And that is why I'm feeling less and less motivated, less and less feeling like I can function. And we use a bunch of different factors, trying to give them the facts, but also sometimes the social, you know, matching patients with like patients who've had the same condition can also really help that. But the key underlying factor here is that the mind is a huge factor. The way we see things and the way in which we ourselves, our own body view and our own mind view of ourselves is very important in our decision making and in our ability to keep going on a rehabilitation program and to empower ourselves versus feeling helpless. And so we have to all search for those facts because the facts are in our favor. As I said, 60-80% of patients who have even very large disc herniations, these disc herniations will resorb and go away. Most patients who have bad disc problems who think, oh my God, my disc is degenerating, my MRI scan shows this factor. There's a lot of facts out there telling you, guess what? That's no different than a wrinkle. That doesn't mean that you're going to be debilitated for the rest of your life. So searching out for those factors, I think, can really motivate the patient to realize, you know what? I don't need to be disabled anymore.
So we can't underestimate the importance of a positive mindset to recovering from spine problems. And you really illustrate this very well in your book with the story of Juan, who's a construction worker who has an accident on the job, ends up with a disc problem as a result. And you gave him the facts. You could have performed a discectomy surgery on him. And armed with the facts and what that might mean in terms of surgery and recovery, this changed his entire motivation.
Yes. And these are the things that taught me a lot along the way. Because I also, in my book, I started out with the example of a patient early in my career who had a disc problem with lifting, and I fixed with surgery, and I felt like this is a fix. And then only after long-term follow-up, after 2-3 years, did I realize, did I really do the right thing for this young person in fusing their spine and then having their next level go bad? That patient had narcotic addiction and other things that occurred after that. Mm. Versus how I did it later with Juan, which was educating him and empowering him and giving him a life, a positive life outlook that he could use to avoid it altogether. I think I did much better later than I did earlier.
It's interesting because there's been this emphasis in recent decades on pain as the fifth vital sign, something we're moving away from because of the opioid epidemic. You say there are actually spine-friendly foods that we can eat, and in fact, something like olive oil can replace the need for ibuprofen, which is kind of amazing.
Yes, and there's been studies of olive oil actually having equivalent to ibuprofen as far as its anti-inflammatory effect. And there are other foods also, if you could stick to vegetables, colorful fruits, wild salmon or other foods that have omega-3 fatty acids, and also legumes, nuts, these all have factors that can be very helpful for the anti-inflammatory effect because it's the inflammation that occurs that causes the degeneration within the disc. And if you can reverse those factors, it not only will help your back, it's also good for cardiovascular health and other types of health.
I want to end with this because I said at the midpoint that you are actually an expert in minimally invasive surgery. And I don't think there's a person on the planet who turns on the TV who hasn't seen those ads. They'll have you up and walking the first day with less than a 1-inch incision. And you see this guy leaving the clinic with a tiny Band-Aid on his back. You say this is really a marketing gimmick. So I'm wondering, what would you like people to do instead of sending their MRIs off to the organization that promises that they're going to have you back up and running in no time?
Oh, this is a great question. I would tell folks to, first of all, realize that you are not just that MRI. Anybody who says that they could know you because of this MRI and give you a consultation based on just a pure MRI scan without knowing more about you is really simplifying who you are. That's a dangerous pathway to go down. And I do these same type of minimally invasive surgeries with a scope and where we go and use lasers. All these are tools. And a laser is a tool that's only used in a very small sub-portion of patients with disc problems that we do endoscopically that it can be helpful for. And the key is to realize that every spinal surgical procedure has a complication rate. And so don't do it if you don't need it. Why expose yourself to any risk, number one? And two is, if your body's going to heal itself, there is no reason to do that. Three is, MRI findings are abnormal in a large proportion of the population with no symptoms. So realize that it's very hard to differentiate what is abnormal on your MRI that's actually important to pay attention to versus something that's just a abnormality that means nothing, that we all get. So don't be fooled into thinking that anybody can understand you with just an MRI. Nothing is without complication. There's no procedure we do. It doesn't have a certain complication rate. So if you can avoid it, definitely go that direction.
Let me ask you real quickly, when would surgery be necessary in your opinion?
One is if you have a rapidly aggressive or expanding tumor that's causing erosion of the bone and impending a fracture or a problem like that. Two is if you're having any kind of neurological issue that is progressive. For example, bowel or bladder incontinence is one of the main reasons why we would go right away within 6 to 8 hours to operate on somebody whose nerves are being pinched to the point where they're losing vital functions like bowel and bladder function. So those are immediate reasons to have something done. Other reasons are when you have what's called myelopathy or when your spinal cord is getting compressed and you're starting to lose balance. Those are the kinds of cases we should be doing all the time, but avoiding these other cases where we're just trying to cure back and neck pain with surgery.
All right. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thanks for having me.
That was Dr. Kamshad Razadeh, author of Take Back Control, A Surgeon's Guide to Healing Your Spine Without Medications or Surgery. He's also the founder of Spine Zone, a non-surgical multi-specialty clinic in San Diego, California. To learn more, check the links on our website, wpsu.org/take note. I'm Patty Satalia, WPSU.